Tuesday morning to you, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon Podcast. Since it is Tuesday, this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode several years ago. Thanks for downloading, and I sure hope you enjoy it.
The homesteaders who came to the Oregon High Desert in the 1910s were a bit late to the party. All the really good land had been claimed years before, or stolen by the timber companies, that's another story. In any case, all that was left was dusty rangeland. Most of these latecomers had a very tough time proving up their claims, that is, living on them for the required 5 years to claim title. Among these dryland homesteaders was a single woman by the name of Kathleen Eloise Rockwell, who was one of the most interesting characters in Central Oregon history. Certainly, it wasn't common for a woman to take on the task of proving up a 320-acre claim, not in 1914, 2 years after women had won the right to vote in Oregon. But what was most interesting about Rockwell as a homesteader was her personal style. There may have been another homesteader somewhere in the American West who regularly wore vaudeville ball gowns and big floral hats and dancing slippers while grubbing sagebrush out of the kitchen garden, but it doesn't seem likely. And Rockwell wasn't just any vaudeville actress. She was the original Klondike Kate, the most famous and beloved performer in Dawson during the great Yukon Gold Rush. In Dawson, Klondike Kate was famous for her red-gold hair, charisma, and happy-go-lucky style on stage. She was also a spectacular conversationalist. Miners in town for an evening would chuck nuggets up on the stage, and she'd scoop them up while simultaneously dancing. She'd drink with them afterwards, sharing bottles of wine that cost $5.1901 each, and pouring her glass discreetly into a spittoon to avoid getting drunk. Meanwhile, they'd be talking about their lives. She talked at least one miner out of committing suicide, talked several out of leaving their wives, and even staked a few with some cash to keep them going after they'd been cleaned out by a professional gambler or robbed on the stage or something. But that was long before. Now Rockwell was in Central Oregon to get away. In Dawson, she'd been in her early 20s, but now she was pushing 40. She was still gorgeous. But like any athlete reaching middle age, she was starting to be dogged with injuries, especially sprained ankles and twisted knees. On top of that, the love of her life, a fellow vaudevillian named Alexander Pantages, whom she had met and lived with in the Yukon, had jilted her in a particularly ugly way, secretly marrying another woman and telling her about it by letter 4 days later. He'd gone on to build a huge empire of vaudeville theaters all over the West with his name on them. And every time she passed one of them, it hurt. The only thing that made it feel better was performing, and she toured and performed frenetically for a few years, trying to lose herself in her work. Finally, after an especially bad ankle sprain brought a sort of nervous breakdown, her doctor told her bluntly that she'd have to quit or she would die. Rockwell had visited Central Oregon before and had been deeply impressed by the beauty of the high desert. Now it seemed like just the place to get away from all things vaudeville, to forget Pantages, to recenter herself. And she had friends there, though actually she had friends almost everywhere among the former sourdoughs of the Yukon Gold Rush. And so, with $3,500 in cash and $3,000 worth of jewelry and several large trunks full of dresses and gowns and hats, she moved on to a 320-acre patch near Brothers, Oregon. She did almost everything dressed as if for a show. Folks would see her walking into Brothers in a dusty but fabulous, and fabulously expensive, evening gown, about once a week. She joked about the odd footprints she left while doing chores around the place. Quote, "Those holes are not the tracks of prehistoric bobcats," she once said, according to Ellis Lucia's account in his book about her. "I made them with my dancing slippers." She also became an avid rockhound, possibly one of Central Oregon's first rockhounds. She fell in love with and married a local man named Floyd Warner. Rockwell beat the odds and became one of only a tiny handful of dryland homesteaders to prove up a claim that didn't include a waterhole. But it still didn't make sense to stay, especially for a social creature like Klondike Kate. She and Floyd sold out soon after getting title. Well, the marriage didn't last too long. By the early 1920s, Rockwell was single again and living in Bend. There she became something of a municipal celebrity. Her home was a half a block from the fire station, and she became a one-woman fire auxiliary, bringing hot coffee to the boys during fire calls. She was a fundraising dynamo, able to shake down almost any business or person for a contribution to a social cause. During the Great Depression, she made gallons and gallons of soup to help out the hobos, too. She became known as Aunt Kate, Aunt Kate of Farewell Bend. Less charitable voices in Bend labeled her, quote, our destitute prostitute. It is pretty unlikely she was either of those things, although there were a few times her finances came pretty close to destitution. And if she ever had dabbled in prostitution, she certainly wouldn't have told anybody about it. In 1929, she was called to testify in a criminal prosecution of Alexander Pantages. Remember him, her ex-boyfriend? Well, he was accused of raping a 17-year-old girl. He was found guilty, although acquitted on retrial, and died in 1936. There are those who think the entire case was trumped up by a group of Yukon sourdoughs angry about how he'd treated Kate. Of course, there are always people who come out in cases like this and suggest that the defendant had somehow was lying or deserved it or whatever, so take that with a grain of salt. She got married two more times, the first time to an old sourdough named Johnny Matson, who'd carried the torch for her since 1901 and still lived and prospected the Yukon much of the time, and after his death, to an old friend named Bill Van Duren. The two of them moved to Sweet Home, where in 1957, she died. This article was first published in the newspapers on August 14th of 2011 under the headline, Vaudeville's Famous Klondike Kate Became an Oregon Legend. Key sources included works by Ellis Lucia, Brad Lockwood, and Morgan Lale. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. More info is at our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house about which more can be learned at pulp-lit.com. Speaking of which, if you enjoy listening to me, you might check out some of my audiobooks. You can find them most easily with a search for my name on audible.com. Most of them are old pulp stuff, H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Rice Burroughs, etc., but at least two of them are Offbeat Oregon history type stuff. Check them out if you're so inclined. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.